5522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 33rd Real Music Film Festival running through February 8th. Thursday, January 28th, will screen Landfill Harmonic. Landfill Harmonic follows the Recycled Orchestra of Keitora, a Paraguayan musical group that plays instruments made entirely out of garbage. When their story goes viral, the orchestra is suddenly catapulted into the global spotlight. This 2014 film has been described as a testament to the transformative power of music and the resilience of the human spirit. That's January 28th at 7 p.m. at the Northwest Film Center in the Witzel Auditorium at 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information on the films and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 6:30 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's time for Prison Pipeline.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
I was about 11 years old. I was kicking it with some older guys.
Good evening, guys. You're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. I'm your host this evening, Carlos Chavez, and I've got three guests in the studio with me tonight. Abel Mandujano, Kevin Lay, and Guy Mataliano. We're going to get into a couple different conversations tonight, but the first thing that I want to kind of throw out there is, you know, tonight's broadcast is going to be kind of a promotion of a new podcast that I'm working on with youth, with community members, youth that are incarcerated over at McLaren Youth Corrections, even some of the folks that I know at Florence. If I can, I want to try and get some youth in from Multnomah County Juvenile as well, but also community members or you know organization reps and agency reps from around the Portland metro area, focusing on the topic of criminalization. And what I mean by that, when I'm talking about criminalization, I'm talking about the process by which you know folks and their actions are become criminals and become criminal activity, and you know the process being the key word there. So we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, the guys that are with me today are from different parts of the like Portland metro and surrounding area, and I would consider hot spots for, you know, what folks would, you know, where folks get targeted for criminal activity, I should say. So we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, experiences that we've had in those areas. But also we want to really just kind of promote, you know, what's going on with this podcast as well, because we're going to be doing we're going to have a listening party at the Morpheus Youth Project office out in Southeast Portland on 15. So the address is 1505A Southeast 122nd Avenue out in the numbers. We're gonna be right in the community where, you know, that's affected the most, and we're gonna be talking about that program is gonna air that night on Prison Pipeline at 6:30, and it's gonna be February the 29th at 6:30. And what we're gonna do is basically that's gonna start a whole series on this topic of criminalization, and I'm gonna hit it from a whole variety of different aspects. So this first one that we do, the first one that's gonna air, it focuses a lot on youth and on and gang, you know gang affiliated youth or those who are profiled as being gang affiliated youth. So guy who's sitting with us today is in that program. He does a really good piece in that program talking about his experiences. And so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to start off by throwing a little sample on there from that program. And then we'll just jump into discussion after that. So
I was about 11 years old. I was kicking it with some older guys from my neighborhood, and they were involved in the gangs. But to me, they were just like older friends I kicked it with and hung out with. And I was with my older sister because she was dating one of my homeboys or whatever at the time. And we're on the max, and it was a simple thing as we didn't have paying for transportation for the max. So we got off the max stop before they come out, and they came off the max stop and pulled us over, even though we got off the property. And then the gang unit came, the gang enforcement of Gresham, Monoma County, and then the sheriff department came, and then Gresham police came, and it was just transit police was there. So it was about, I don't even know, like 12 cops just for three teenagers who didn't buy a ticket, basically. And they put us down, basically did like a felony stop, questioned us what we were doing, and all we were really trying to do was go to the mall and go to Lloyd Center. And and in my eyes, I felt like we weren't doing nothing wrong, but this was my first run-in with the gang enforcement. And I had a homeboy there, and this wasn't his first time, so he was kind of like sticking up for himself, and the police didn't like that, so he was in handcuffs, and they knocked him to the ground, and we all got mad. And then they kept asking me what gang I was from, my nickname, and this is before I was even into all that. And I could see all the hate in their eyes and how they were speaking to us, and I really felt harassed and targeted. Yeah, they were all white officers, and we were all a bunch of Mexicans. And that was my first experience, and ever since then, it's just been bad interactions. I never had a good, healthy relationship with law enforcement. And the way they treated me that day for not even doing anything really wrong, as most people do, they only buy a ticket for the max, I feel very disrespected, and a lot of anger towards the police department. So, yeah, I think that was my first time with running into law enforcement.
Gustavo is another student of mine who explains an encounter that he had with police at an even earlier age.
Well, I was young, and we were always, there was always complaints with the neighbors or just with a lot of people in general about, us being too loud or being, causing trouble because our family members were getting into fights, arguments, and stuff like that. And ever since, we've always been harassed by the police. But my real confrontation with an officer was in elementary school. I was wearing a rosary, and he told me that, he asked me if I was a gang member, and which sounds silly, I know. It's, yeah, Gang of Jesus. But he said, he told me to take it off, and I told him, no, this is my religion, so you're going to have to, this is going to be an issue. Like, I'm not going to take it off. And then, so they made a big issue about it, called the principal, called my parents, told me to take it off. Eventually, I had to because my parents didn't speak English, and it was difficult for them to understand, not knowing what was happening. Like, they believed I was getting into trouble, and they started actually believing that I was a gang member since elementary, which I wasn't. And ever since, yeah, I've always been harassed because they always had that label over my head ever since elementary school.
So those are two of my students from McLaren Youth Correctional Facility. One was Ezekiel, the other one is Gustavo, and they're talking about their first encounters with police as youth. And as you can see, and they're both from other sides of the Portland metro area. You got one who grew up in out in the Gresham area, and then you got another one that grew up out in Beaverton. And just like many other places in the United States, especially major cities, you've got police officers who are confronting youth at very early age, and you know, confronting them as being gang members and profiling them in certain ways, which is actually one of the reasons why I named the podcast that we're doing Profiles. You know, it's a kind of a play on words for a number of different things. But so what I want to talk about now is, you know, we got guys here that are from different areas of Multnomah County and surrounding areas. Abel being from Washington County, an area where youth are being... So these guys are all from areas that, you know, the work that I do in the juvenile system, youth are coming from each of the areas that these guys are, come from. And two of the guys, if you guys don't mind me mentioning this, actually were incarcerated there as well. So we're kind of, we kind of want to share some of those experiences. So Abel being from the Washington County area, an area where, you know, they have kind of a reputation for really being kind of heavy-handed and sending youth off to corrections pretty easily. Kevin Lay is also, he's from Southeast Portland primarily, and you know, has been targeted himself, and has never been gang affiliated or anything like that. But, you know, of course, you know, a lot of us, you know, have family members and friends that are involved, and we've all, you know, in some way been victims of this kind of targeting. And then Guy also being from that Rockwood and East Portland area. So what do you guys agree with that? I mean, do you guys feel that that's something that's commonplace in each of the areas that you guys are coming from?
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I see it more and more common as I grow up and see, you know, sometimes cops would just stop and maybe they'll ask for your ID and you're just walking home. Like, seems like a pretty common thing most of the time.
I feel like they want to start you as young as they possibly can, you know? So then when they see you young, I feel like they target you quicker, you know? Like, oh, I'm going to make sure he knows, you know? They want to, like, instill that at you at a young age. Like, oh, you're going to learn. You're going to know who we are, bro. You know, we're going to make sure you know who we are.
Well, in those two examples that we started off with, you have, you know, one youth who was in middle school, like pretty early middle school, and then you have another one who was still in elementary school being targeted while he was on, you know, on school campus, you know, for his so-called gang affiliation, you know, profiling him because he's wearing a cross, you know.
Yeah, it sounds...
Rosario.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess, you know, and that's the thing is, you know, this is something that I've mentioned in the past, you know, you have folks that are coming from different agencies coming into these schools and teaching, you know, staff members and, you know, security and what have you about how to recognize gangs and, you know, that delinquent, you know, that delinquent kind of, you know, background, I guess. But they're focusing in on, you know, what these kids look like, and what they're doing is they're basically just racially profiling these youth. And so, you know, they're talking about, you know, what the style of clothing that they're wearing and the way that they're doing their hair and their eyebrows and their whatever, you know, and that becomes the way that they profile them. But, you know, you don't see them in there going, oh, well, these kids, they got, you know, they don't, you know, they got bald heads and, you know, they're wearing Doc Martens. You don't see anybody doing any of that. You know, I mean, you know, I'm not trying to make this, you know, I'm not trying to point fingers at, you know, white folks or anything like that, but, you know, there's a different way that people are treated in the schools. And so that's the other thing I wanted to kind of ask you guys about, you know, what are your experiences, you know, in the schools that you guys have gone to, with being profiled in these different ways, or what have you seen?
I believe it was my freshman year, and I got kicked out for wearing all black. And that was just basically because it was a description of a gang attire, just wearing a solid color. And I believe it was freshman year. And at the time, I still wasn't really engaged in it. I was just surrounded by it. I knew what was going on. I just didn't really pay it no mind. But I was kicked out for, I think it was the whole rest of the day of the school, because I didn't want to change my clothes or whatever they were. I can't remember what the principal was asking me to do, but but yeah, it definitely does have an impact on us.
Yeah, I remember there was a while I didn't really go too much like middle schooling and like high school. I was already a knucklehead. I was kicked out of schools and stuff, you know. But I went to used to go to this one school. Can I say it or should I not say the school? Whatever, it was a school anyway.
General.
Yeah, it was a school, And you couldn't wear Dickies. You could not wear the brand Dickies in that school, like at all, you know? I always thought that was hilarious.
Yeah. Well, I had something similar because I've been breakdancing in the Southeast Portland area for a while with my crew, New Birth Crew. And, you know, anytime they see people that dress a certain way, talk a certain way, have, you know, carry themselves a certain way, it's something that's very for them, very hard for them to control. And a lot of times they'll go after those kids and kind of group you real quick and say, these kids look like this, they talk like this, they're trouble. When really we're actually trying to do something positive, and they see the opposite.
See, and that's why I wanted Kevin to be on the show today, because he's speaking from a whole nother perspective there, of coming from the hip hop culture, you know. Whereas when I was a youth, you know, I was never gang affiliated, but I was always kind of lumped into that because I was part of this hip hop culture as well, you know. So that's always treated as kind of one and the same, you know. But even, you know, being a gang affiliated youth, why is it that they need to, you know, that police and these administrative staff, you know, are, why is it that they feel that they have to treat you with this heavy hand, you know? And instead of, you know, recognizing that you know, these are the people that probably need some more attention, you know? And
right,
you know, that's the thing. That, like, that's the thing. That's why I don't, like, get too mad about, you know, profiling. Bro, everybody profiles, no matter who you are. If you walk into a room, you look through the room, you're gonna use your best understanding to judge everybody in that room. It's natural. So it's, you know, I don't get too angry about it, because I know that's they're just trying to figure it out. But you got to come about it a different way. So maybe if you see a group of cats that you think are gangbangers, you know, you need to now what's your next step on how to talk to those people? You know what I mean? How are you gonna encounter them? How you gonna interact with them? That's what I feel like is important, you know, because, I mean, you're always going to have profiling. It's a joke. You can't not be human and, you know, and not profile. It's just natural.
I come from Washington County, and all the schools out there predominantly is Caucasian. And right when, you know, my high school is, I would say, probably like 15 to 20% was Hispanic or Caucasian or African American, and Hispanics were the greater minority in that group. And so, yeah, we got it the hardest, in the sense that our binders were, you know, where we kept our books and stuff like that, was even looked on. Like, why do you have a Jesus, you know, cross on your binder? Or it was the simplest things. And I think sometimes it's because the white folks who were, you know, running the school or whatever, they didn't want their kids to see that or be influenced by that. Because I used to play basketball in high school, my freshman year, and I was one of four Hispanic kids that were, like, involved in positive things. And even then, we would still get, like, people would automatically jump to conclusions or assume that we were up to no good, or, you know, my friends' parents were, like, always on their toes and making sure that their kids weren't getting into trouble because they were hanging out with us. And I feel like that kind of pressured me a little bit to hang out with people who I had more in common with, and that was Hispanic kids. And little by little, it just kind of rolled into one thing.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of different examples that I've kind of run into as a coordinator at a number of the different schools that I've worked at. And yeah, I've seen the whole binder thing, you know, the teachers. I think it's weird, because some folks, like, they feel like they want to get in, like, in that cop mode, you know. They want to, I don't know what it is.
Power tripping.
Yeah, it is a weird power trip, you know. But it's this weird, like, control, like, dynamic.
Authority.
Yeah. Authoritative type of position that they step in. And then they, but even folks, I've run into folks where they, it seems like genuinely they want to know more about the culture, but don't truly understand it. And they take little bits of stuff that they learn about and they blow it way out of proportion, yeah, like, you know?
Yeah. When my friend got killed, I would say I was in my sophomore year. And I remember one of the, he was like a vice principal. I think he was either a counselor or a vice principal, one of the two. Prior to my friend getting killed, he was always like harassing me and like nitpicking stuff, you know, trying to look for something for me to get in trouble. And then when my friend got killed, I didn't go to school for like a couple of days. And when I went back to school, I remember him saying, "Hey, I heard your friend got killed. Or did your friend get killed?" Because I was wearing a shirt that said, "Rest in peace, so-and-so." And yeah, I was like, yeah, he went through this. And I remember him saying, "Oh, I'm sorry. How did he get killed?" You know, I didn't say how he got killed. And I just turned around and walked away. It's like, if you would have asked me what I was into or really wanted to know what we were doing, then you could have just asked me a long time ago. You don't have to wait for my friend to get killed. You know what I mean? But yeah, my friend was shot, you know, unfortunately, but they don't know what that's like, you know?
Like, why didn't you get involved?
Exactly.
You know, sooner? Why don't you get to know me instead of just treating me like this outsider?
Exactly. And yeah. Nitpicking, like always messing with me.
Yeah.
And me and my friends, you know?
Well, so like the thing that's scary is what that does is that starts to create these things, you know? I mean, like right. You said, you weren't involved, but you know, do you feel that was something that kind of almost pushed you into it?
Yeah, because like I mentioned, like I essentially became that because I felt like I wasn't accepted hanging out with all these basketball players. And a lot of my friends, their parents were married parents. They had a little white puppy and like they were driving nice cars. They lived in nice homes. And I didn't, you know? So I felt I had more in common with this group of people. And then them, who were the authority, the superiority, putting that pressure on me made me feel like, okay, yeah, I don't belong with these type of people, you know?
Yeah, and what we had after we did a little listening party over at McLaren Youth Corrections, and at the end of it I was gonna play a little snippet from that, but it's about like a 6-minute piece, and we got a short show tonight, so I'm more interested in us kind of opening up this dialogue. So I really want to urge folks, come out and check out the listening party that we have. You're gonna hear some really good stuff that I think, Guy, you really put some really good stuff out there on that podcast.
Thank you.
That I think is actually very heavy. When we had that listening party, that was the part that people responded to the most, was what he had to say. And it was because what you were saying was very genuine the whole time and very, very honest, you know, and in a way almost brutally honest, you know. In a way for people to kind of shakes people up. And that's exactly the type of thing that I think is important with this kind of dialogue, is for us to kind of speak on it how it is. I just want to remind everybody when that's going to be. That's going to be February the 29th at 1505 A Southeast Portland, Southeast 122nd Avenue in Portland. So I'm just putting that out there because I want you guys to be thinking about that. You can check out the website at morpheusyouth.org as well to get some more information on that. But to kind of jump back into what we're talking about, that we had that discussion at McLaren, and what some of the youth that were there were kind of responding to was like what some of the stuff that Guy had talked about how, you know, you this constant like this one-upping that happens, you know, like where the administrators or the staff members almost they're doing this one-up with you, you know. They're constantly trying to kind of push you in certain ways, you know. Yeah. that get you to respond, and you as a youth, you know, who's going through these things, yeah, are kind of going, well, what's the deal, you know, like yeah. I'm not gonna sit here and be punked by the, you know,
that's
what I mean?
What I'm saying, man. And it's like, and then it's like, you know, after so long, they're like, you know, you're a bad kid. You're a bad kid. You're a bad kid. You're doing bad things. You get to a point, man, you're like, oh, you want me to be bad, homie? Huh? I'll be bad, bro. Like,
yeah.
You want me to be a bad kid? I'm the bad kid now, huh? Okay, I'll show you what a bad kid is, bro. Yeah. You know? And it's like, that's all you really have. Like Homeboy Abel was saying, you know, like, all you got is your people. You know what I mean? And you're from the hood. You're from the ghetto. You know, you got these high class, whatever, you know, and they don't want to help you or nothing, or like, you know what I'm saying? They just, I don't know, man, it's too much pointing the finger. And it's like, you know, it gets to the point where you could get, you know, you're getting kind of cynical, you're getting kind of like angry about that thing, like, man, maybe we are bad, bro. Maybe we're all just a bunch of bad kids.
Starts
all
to
right.
make you wonder. Yeah,
maybe that's what we are. Maybe we are bad, you know. So all right, let's be the bad guy, you know.
Yeah, one of the students had put it really well when we were there. He says, you know, if you're a rooster, you know, and they're telling you over and over again that you're a duck, you know, at a certain point you're going to start to question it, and you're going to start to wonder,
start quacking.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you know. Yeah,
right.
So,
and it's not even, I do relate to that too, because sometimes you don't even have to do anything bad per se, because while we're all, I'll go back to, you know, the breakdancing community, because in schools I saw a lot of administration have a lack of appreciation and a lack of just resources for, you know, the group of kids that wanted to break dance or do something positive. And, you know, they kind of shoot us to the side and treated us like we weren't a priority. So sometimes it's, even though the youth want to go in the direction of positivity, the administration perpetuates these problems by using this authoritarian, idealistic way of looking at things, and it doesn't help the youth be able to open up and feel more comfortable and trust these people that run these schools, and actually, you know, it hurts the youth more than anything.
Yeah. You need to understand that more, you know. They're coming from different generations.
Yeah.
Times are changing, you know. What is the children involved with, you know?
Well, and here's another thing too. I mean, how much does we all come from, you know, immigrant backgrounds? Is that the, you know, is that we got a mixed, you know, bag here today. We got, you know, Mexican, Puerto Rican, Italian, and Vietnamese, you know, so we have a good mixture here, and we've all, you know, experienced these kind of snap judgments on us just because of the way that we look and the way we speak and the way we talk. But how much does language actually become a barrier? Because some of the things that I would see quite a bit in the schools was how defenseless a lot of these young people were, because their parents were afraid to really speak on things, and they were just like, okay, let's just get through this and move on, because the parents are afraid because they don't speak the language, mm-hmm. and they're afraid, you know. I mean, what are you guys' thoughts on that?
My mom was a single mother, and when I would get in trouble, she would be pressured by whoever, like the principal and all the other staff members, into getting me into these little silly programs. And my mom didn't quite understand, because even after we would leave the teacher meetings or whatever, she would want me to elaborate on what was going on. Like, why would you say yes if you don't know what's going on? So it's like, that has a lot to do with what goes on too, because they stick you in programs that you don't want to be in, you shouldn't be in, and honestly, they shouldn't even be running. Like, why waste your time and money on a program that's not going to help these kids? You know, why not invest that money in like a hands-on program that they like, music, breakdancing, you know, art or whatever, but they stick us in these like study halls or whatever, not even a study, I don't remember, it's kind of like a study hall thing that they had us doing, but it made me feel kind of dumb when I was in high school, because I had to go to this study hall thing and all the other kids were going on their own way, but I was only in that study hall because my mom agreed to something, she had no idea what was going on. You know?
I noticed that, man. I feel like a lot of the parents, they don't know what's going on, and they're extra trusting. You notice that?
Yeah.
They say whatever, you know, and like, I've noticed that a lot of times the parents will be like quick to just whatever they say, you know, like, oh, they know what they're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah, that's how my mom was too.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think deep down they want to be able to trust mm-hmm. the staff members. They don't want to think that there's something weird going on. But at the same time, you know, and also I see where family members are afraid because they know that they don't have, you know, immigration. They don't have immigrant status, you know, and so they're like, hey, let's just get through this because I don't want something to fall out that needs, you know what I mean? I don't want to be exposed for something else. And so they're just like, let's just get through this and move on because, you know, we're already targets, you know, as it is.
Why are you bringing the heat, boy?
Yeah, you know what I mean? So.
Yeah, both my parents were Vietnamese refugees that came to America. I'm first generation born in the U.S., so, you know, it's almost a blessing that I know the language and I can understand more about the system and all of that that I got through my education that I could receive here. Because I started to notice a lot of immigrants and refugee parents suffer from sort of a low self-esteem, like, because they feel like they're not worthy enough or they don't understand the language. They're scared to kind of step out the box and kind of challenge certain things because, you know, we're here by some privilege anyways, you know, because back home, you know, they didn't have the same rights and the same, you know, the same lifestyle, the same, you know, quality of lifestyle. So it's really hard when they don't understand the language growing up here. And so, you know, a lot of us take it for granted, but really it's something very important that
it's a pretty huge barrier.
Right.
It's a pretty huge barrier. I mean, I see it with, I've seen it with the Somali community, I've seen it with the Ukrainian, the Slavic community, I've seen it with the Vietnamese community, you know, Asian community as a whole. You know, we, especially out there in East Portland, you see quite a bit of it. But you know, we're running out of time here. We're getting to the end of the show. I want to remind you all once again, you know, these shows, these half-hour programs always go so quick mm-hmm. when we're doing this stuff. And we can speak so much further on this. But, you know, we do have that good opportunity with that listening party at 1505 A Southeast 122nd Avenue. That's basically, that's the Morpheus Youth Project office. That's a new or a young organization that I run out in East Portland, where we're going to have this discussion even further. So, you know, I want to welcome you, the listener, and your family and friends to come on out. It's not the hugest space, but it's enough room for us to sit down, listen to that program. I'm going to have some visuals, and then we'll have a really good conversation afterwards. We'll have some snacks and some drinks, so that we can kind of relax and kind of chop it up. Some of the folks that are here will be there as well, as well as some others. So we'll really get a good conversation going, and I look forward to seeing you guys out there. So once you're listening to KBOO on Portland, this is Prison Pipeline. I've been your host, Carlos Chavez. My guests have been Guy Mataliano, Kevin Lay, and Abel Mandujano. And I want to thank you all for listening. Check out more at morpheusyouth.org or at kboo.fm.
Much love.
New birth.
Yeah. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Milagro Theater, whose new play, Broken Promises, by Olga